From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Southern California-based food writer Gustavo Arellano recently profiled a restaurant in Costa Mesa called Taco Maria that charges $72 for a dozen fancy blue corn tamales. But rather than criticize the restaurant, Arellano lauded the chief for paying premium dollars for high-quality masa that supports Mexican farmers, quote, in order to challenge our current food system, where exploitation at every step, from the picker to the waiter, is the unfortunate norm. These days, it's all the rage to be a foodie, and people who identify as such love to show off their obscure and delicious food finds on social media. But how many foodies actually understand the political economy of our food system? And why is it so critical for us to get our food's origins while we fetishize the perfect morsel? My guest is Eric Holt Jimenez. He is the executive director of Food First, the editor of Food Movements Unite, Strategies to Transform Our Food Systems, co-author of Food Rebellions, Crisis and the Hunger for Justice with Raj Patel and Annie Shattuck, and author of the book Campesino a Campesino, Voices from Latin America's Farmer to Farmer Movement for Sustainable Agriculture. He now joins me to discuss his newest book, A Foodie's Guide to Capitalism, Understanding the Political Economy of What We Eat. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Hello, Sonali. Glad to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So it is certainly the rage to be a foodie. We see it all over social media. Most people these days will stop to photograph their food before they eat it so that they can Instagram it. But as I mentioned, very few of us stop to think about where the food comes from, how it's produced, who has been involved. And what's remarkable about our food system today is, of course, that only a handful of corporations control the vast majority of the food that's produced, even foods that we think of as organic or that we might buy at Whole Foods. So what led you to writing this book? Is it just that there's just too much in the shadows around our food system?
Well, actually, Food First has been around for 40 years. Our mission is to end the injustices that cause hunger. And following that mission, we have allied ourselves with many, many organizations in the food justice movement and the food sovereignty movement. And that movement is spreading and is getting stronger. And what became clear in the movement was that people were so busy fighting against the injustices in the movement or the lack of access to healthy food or, poor wages in the food industry, that they didn't really have time to look at the food system as a whole or the economic and political system that the food system is a part of. In other words, capitalism. We have a capitalist food system. And yet people didn't really have a strong grasp of capitalism itself, even though they were trying to change the food system and had a lot of information and knowledge about their particular issues, but the larger systemic issues often sort of fell through the cracks. So this book is sort of written as a primer about capitalism, and it's not just for foodies. It's for anybody who's trying to change the food system. And the premise of the book is, how can we possibly change the food system if we don't know what kind of a food system we really have?
Right. So the idea of food as a commodity is something that goes back, quite a few decades. And even these days, the sorts of trends that come out from first world countries, such as, all of a sudden coconut oil is the rage, or, Ethiopian teff. And then suddenly someone figures out a way to make a lot of money off of it. And suddenly something that might have been a sustainable crop in a small village somewhere in Latin America or Africa is a huge industry, and ConAgra is all over it. So how did it get to be this way? How did the idea of food as a commodity, in the same way that we might treat oil and gas, become acceptable?
Well, that's the entire foundation of capitalism is commodities. And so we ask about food. Food is a special commodity. And had food not been turned into a commodity, it's very doubtful that capitalism ever would have developed. In fact, capitalism develops by first dispossessing the peasantry who produce food so that capitalists can produce wool for the factories in Manchester and whatnot. And then but they still need the food from the peasants. So they want cheap food from the peasants, but they also want cheap labor from the peasants. And sure enough, the peasantry produces both cheap food and cheap labor. And so that's really the foundation of the commoditization of food and labor, which got the capitalist system going. You know, from there, the commoditization of food, you know, the sugar and cotton and whatnot, fuels the empires which spread out around the world, dispossessing indigenous people and completely transforming the landscapes. And of course, the commoditization of food also impacts labor, and we get slavery and indentured servitude, and all these things are part of the capitalist food system.
So industrial agriculture went hand in hand with with capitalism, with global capitalism in particular, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Starting off with what we call mercantilism, but then, you know, what capitalism does is, you know, first it capitalizes industry, and then it turns around and industrializes agriculture and capitalizes it. And so that always provides advantages to those who have the most capital. And we still see that today. So the examples which you gave earlier, you know, for example, quinoa or teff, gee, it sounds like a great idea to get these products into the market so these poor farmers can benefit from the world market. And what immediately happens, of course, is they become dispossessed of their land because the value of that commodity is too great to allow it to accrue to a poor farmer. And that's when the corporations come in and take over.
And so inadvertently, we end up feeding those very issues that we might decry. Now, what does, you know, we were sold, society was sold this idea that only global capitalism can help feed the world. And this is a huge foundation of how the food system is built today. The Green Revolution would feed the world. GMOs will feed the world, that you can't possibly, because the world population is multiplying so fast, you can't possibly have a world where everybody is fed unless you have massive agribusiness and this current kind of food system. Has the Green Revolution delivered on any of its promises?
Yes, you know, the capitalist food system likes to tell a lot of happy stories about itself. But a lot of these are enshrouded in myths. For example, who does feed the world? It's not industrial capitalist food. It certainly aren't the big corporations who feed the world at all. They feed maybe 15% of the world. I'll tell you who feeds the world. It's poor peasant farmers. And most of those farmers happen to be women. So women actually feed most of the world, and most women farmers are poor, and many of them make up the ranks of the hungry. On less than 25% of the land, poor peasants feed close to 75% of the world population. So let's dispense with the myth that capitalist agriculture feeds the world. That's not true at all. Capitalist agriculture needs to tell us these myths that we can only feed the world through GMOs, because they're really after that market. That market, which up until today is still controlled mostly by peasant farmers, that's what they want. Capitalism has to continually expand, and our capitalist food system is no exception. They need to continually expand their market. The fact is, we already produce 1.5 times more than enough food to feed every man, woman, and child on the planet. And this has been true for almost a half century. People go hungry not because there's not enough food. They go hungry because they can't afford the food which is being produced. So the notion that somehow producing more food when we already overproduce food is going to solve the problem of hunger really elides the problem of capitalism itself.
What is the critique that has emerged or had even emerged at its origin? If capitalism and the advent of industrial agriculture went hand in hand, how did, say, Karl Marx view this, the idea of food being a commodity? What were some of the critiques that we saw from the early anti-capitalist critics of food being, and our food system being, subject to capitalist exploitation?
Yes, well, Marx saw very clearly, actually, the problems with capitalist agriculture. And he accused capitalist agriculture of destroying both the farmer and the soil. And he developed a thesis called the metabolic rift, which is really an ecological understanding of agriculture and an ecological critique of capitalist agriculture, because what Marx saw was all the nutrients from the countryside were being transported to the city to feed workers, and that they were creating waste, particularly a big problem with the rivers and creating waste. And he was saying the capitalist agriculture wasn't able to return the nutrients to the soil as pre-capitalist agriculture had.
That's pretty remarkable. So he actually took into account the cost to the planet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these writings of Marx have been ignored because many Marxists wanted to concentrate on, you know, the proletariat and the working class. And Marx was accused of calling the peasantry a sack of potatoes and, unorganizable and whatnot. But in fact, Marx and many others, as a matter of fact, Chayanov and other analysts, really delved into what is called the agrarian transition, the relationship of agriculture to capitalism and to industry, and how that is impossible without agriculture, and how the wealth from agriculture is transferred to industry. And that sort of transfer of wealth still goes on today.
I'm wondering if the idea of a foodie can actually help fuel the movement for sustainable food, because if the quest is for authentic, original food, what we get from the capitalist food system is the exact opposite of that, right? What we get from factory farming, what we get from pesticide-ridden plants is the exact opposite of what a foodie is searching for.
No, exactly. And that's why so much of that has become a niche market, which only very wealthy people can enjoy. And so, yes, it's great to pay farmers more for traditional blue corn, for example. But what about the workers? Don't they deserve traditional blue corn
as well?
Can they
afford the $72 a dozen for a dozen tamales? Right. That's a good question.
Of course they can, And so, in general, the trends, I think that the reason we chose this title is because I think what the whole foodie movement has done is to raise the importance of food. And I think there's a spectrum of foodies and food justice activists and food sovereignty activists and farm justice activists who are very clear on the social and political implications of their work in the food system, and others who are not, who just want to enjoy good food. Well, everybody should be able to enjoy good food, but that's really not enough. Just like voting with our fork is just simply not enough. We have to change the structures and the rules and the institutions of the food system in order to really have an equitable and sustainable food system.
Right. So taking on, just as Naomi Klein points out, you can't tackle the climate crisis without tackling capitalism. It sounds like you're saying you can't tackle the food system without tackling capitalism. And of course, food and climate are quite deeply interrelated.
No, absolutely. And I have a tremendous debt to Naomi Klein and her insights. Because in fact, if we want to change the food system, we have to change capitalism because it's a capitalist food system. And if we're going to change capitalism, we're really talking about changing everything. So from her book, This Changes Everything, our approach is, no, now it's time to change everything. And I think that actually the food system and the food movement is very well positioned to do this. I think that the food movement is pivotal in the political and economic changes which we need for the survival of our species, quite frankly. This food system and this capitalist system is taking us on a road to absolute destruction of our civilizations.
Eric, the capitalist would say to you, there's just no way to have efficiency in food production without capitalism. You have to have somebody who has an incentive for profit in order to produce the quantity and the quality of things that we need to eat. And while that may apply at the small scale level, of course, the capitalist wants to apply that to the biggest corporations in the world. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, markets have been around long before capitalism.
Right.
So we can have markets without capitalism, or certainly not with the type of capitalism that we have today, this new liberal capitalism. So there's nothing to say that we're against markets. Of course not. That's silly. But we certainly don't need these corporate controlled markets. And this notion of efficiency is also misleading because, in fact, agroecological farms, farms which basically sort of mimic nature in order to produce a food surplus, marketable surplus, are much more efficient in terms of energy, in terms of providing work, in terms of healthy food, in terms of the environment, than is the industrial food system. So, you know, just efficiency in terms of market power really hasn't helped us with the ecological challenges and social challenges that we have today.
Can decentralizing the food system be a first step? I mean, there are about 10 corporations that control, a lot of where people get their food through. But that sort of centralization creates these chokeholds in our food system. So if we were to imagine the opposite, a decentralized food system, setting aside how we might get there for a minute, is that an approach that preserves markets but dismantles neoliberal capitalism?
I think it's a very necessary approach. If we continue along the way that we're going now, with this tremendous consolidation of power and wealth within the food system and everywhere else, what we're going to have is maybe, 50,000 big farms providing food for the entire world as the peasantry becomes dispossessed by corporate agriculture. Well, nearly a third of humanity lives in the countryside and is connected to local food systems. So the question is, where are they going to go? We have no new industrial revolution to sop up this labor. These people will flood into the cities looking for work. And of course, there isn't work. We would have to grow the economy by about 15% a year for the next half century to absorb all this labor. But that's impossible. We're not even growing at 2% now. So it really is a global challenge how to decentralize our food system, how to make the countryside a good place to live, keep people on the land, invest in the countryside in order to avoid what is really going to be a social and environmental catastrophe.
So finally, Eric, what's the takeaway for foodies and non-foodies, for everybody who eats, let's put it that way, for how we re-envision our capitalist food system? Because unfortunately, most Americans want a simple prescription. They want to know, well, should I shop here or there? Should I emphasize this or that? Should I support this farm or not? Should I boycott Driscoll's or not? What's a takeaway from your book that you want to leave listeners and viewers with?
Well, thank you. Look, everybody should keep doing all these things. Most of these things are good or good enough or they're good enough for now. But that's not enough. We need to eat according to our values. Keep doing that if you can afford to do so. But we also need to grow organic food, and we need to grow agroecologically. And so all these practices are very important. Keep up with the practices. But it's time to assume the political responsibility for the transformation of our food system And that means organizing politically. And that means understanding how the system works. That means understanding political economy. That's what the book is designed to do. Give the reader the tools to understand how the capitalist food system works so that we can work together to change it. And we really do need to converge between the people who work on the practical issues and the people who work on the political issues.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Eric, give out a website for Food First.
Yes, it's www.foodfirst.org.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Thanks so much, Eric.
Thank you, Sonali.
Eric Holt Jimenez is the executive director of Food First. We've been discussing his new book, A Foodie's Guide to Capitalism, Understanding the Political Economy of What We Eat. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.